good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, or good evening, you know, that familiar song. Anywhere around this rotating planetary sphere orbiting the sun at 18.5 miles per second, that's a kind of a fair clip. Well, so much is going on. Tonight, again, we're going to try to connect more dots. I'm fascinated, as you all know, perhaps even a bit obsessed with this campaign, because as I said, you know, a year ago, this is the thing to watch. This is not politics as usual. And of course, that prediction has been amply amplified. I mean, every single day there's something new. If you go to theothersideofmidnight.com, that's our homepage, theothersideofmidnight.com, and then click on Radio with Pictures, that takes you to tonight's guest page. Scroll down under my items. Number one, Donald Trump. I mean that Obama founded ISIS. Literally. Now, what have I been saying for some months now about the mythical connections of the U.S. presidency to the Egyptian pantheon of Osiris, Isis, and Horus, the real guys, and the fact that this terror group is basically an in-your-face, 180 degrees profanity to those who believe in this ancient religion, a profanity of everything they hold sacred and dear and holy. And so that's why, again, in this model, the president, as I've reiterated again and again and again, will not use the words ISIS to describe this blasphemy, this abomination that's masquerading under a name of a sacred icon in the religion that we're speaking about, but insist on using the words ISIL. Well, guess who today either has been listening to old shows or independently has information, I think it's the latter, and comes up with this remarkable connection of the President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, and ISIS, the generation of ISIS, the generation, the co-generation with Hillary of ISIS, etc., etc. And then he specifically attacks Obama on the fact that he doesn't use the words ISIS, he uses the words ISIL. In other words, Joseph Farrell and Jim Mars and I and some others are kind of tracking all these dots, all these connecting, cascading Venn diagram networks. What does Donald know and when did he know it? It has been my contention for some time that the Trump campaign deserved really intense scrutiny because it wasn't normal. It was outside the box, outside the tetrahedron. The more I've looked, the more I have come to the conclusion that in every way possible, Trump is throwing the game. That you cannot make that many blunders, self-inflicted errors, what they call in the political game, unforced errors, borrowing from baseball, and not mean it. And even people like now, Joe Scarborough the other morning said, you know, a couple hours after I'd said it, it's a scam. Then, of course, you come up with these subliminal texts. Behind the scenes, he's dropping these nuggets of incredible four-dimensional wisdom, the connection of the Hillary campaign with the Rothschilds via the double tetrahedron, the equilateral triangles intertwined that look like the Jewish flag, but are not, are much deeper in time. And then the whole thing about Muslims. Why are we really pointing at Muslims? What does the Quran really have to tell us? Besides, well, anyway, we're going to be getting deeper into symbolism tonight with my guest. If you want to take a look at some of the other items under my items tonight, you might cast item number two in an incredibly upstream position from the cascade of assent to medical marijuana. The DEA has said now that they are not going to change the scheduling. Wonder what's going on there. Then the Rio Olympics. We're going to be talking in some depth about the Rio Olympics tomorrow night, and that was the week that was, looking back. The Rio Olympics are such a personification of this polarization in the physics that I've been talking about. With the good getting better, I mean, look at our folks. Look at all those folks. And the bad, the context, getting worse and worse. And finally, we have multiple bomb blasts across Thailand tonight. Again, the bad are getting worse and in public. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. And as soon as I get rid of this frog in my throat, we shall return. The next to be with you.
We're caught in a trap.
Music playing.
I can't walk out because our love is too much.
Oh my God, the king. Last night we had Leo the king on. Well, tonight we have the other one, the real one, Elvis. Let's listen for a couple seconds here. You know, it's really interesting when a team comes together. M has got an almost hyperdimensional acuity for the right song at the right time. Because we're going to be talking tonight about Suspicious Minds, starting with mine, of course, every night. I keep asking, what's going on? What's really going on? So my guest tonight, Deborah Carruthers, is a researcher with a passion for Western world history, the older the better. She says, so here we all are in the year 2016, finally getting down to uncovering the great lie that's been the driving force in the world's background since the conclusion of World War II. Or did that war ever really end? That lie, of course, is the false idea that the Nazis quietly faded away. In February 2016, V, the guerrilla economist of RogueMoney.net, invited Deborah to join his team of writers and readers who are all trying to slay the bankster in their own way. We, she says, carry on with confidence because no evil has ever stood forever against the onslaught of truth. Undaunted, we move forward. Articles posted on that site by the author's name of Bankster Slayer is her own creation, so she makes no apologies if what you hear in the blog steps on toes of any long-cherished paradigms. She concludes, I am just the messenger. So good morning, messenger, and welcome to the other side.
Good morning, Richard, and happy Perseid Meteor Shower.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Gosh, everybody should take their portable device that they're clutching in their hands, go outside and look up. We're at the height of the so-called annual Perseid Meteor Shower, where the Earth crosses the orbit of these little bergy bits of cometary material. And even the tiniest things, like grain-sized things the size of, you know, sand grains, when they enter the atmosphere at several miles per second, they can create stunning, you know, visual displays. So, you know, at some point during the show, take your handheld device, go outside on the night side of the Earth, you know where you are, and look up. I mean, you might as well go and look up anyway, because a lot of what's going to be unfolding in the next several days and weeks and months is all about looking up. We cannot continue to do the same old, same old, same old. We're definitely on a downward spiral. So I'm trying to introduce concepts of ways to pull us out of this spiral and move us in totally different directions. And the beginning of that is to appropriately analyze what the heck is going on. As I said at the top of the show, Deborah, we're seeing more and more arcane symbology becoming more and more naked, like it's all out there, like they don't care if we intercept the messages, because their messages are really important now, because we're getting close to, as I've termed it for a few years, crunch time. What say you?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I was hoping maybe we'll even mention some of the Hollywood movies that are coming out soon. Have you...
Anything you want tonight, because it's symbology night. I mean, way to figure out what they're up to is to simply read their language. Fortunately, now we have enough people who have decoded this heavily symbolic, you know, thing we're in, whatever is a screenplay, virtual reality, Musk thinks we're all in this virtual reality. Well, given that it seems more likely maybe that we are, the script has taken a dramatic turn. So yes. Where do you want to begin?
Well, I was just going to mention a couple of the movies. In fact, I saw previews of this while watching the Olympics. They were promoting that new movie, Dante's Inferno. That's the Tom Hanks movie, another sequel to the Dan Brown movies he does, which is supposedly he figures out that Dante's Inferno wasn't just some allegory, but was an actual prophecy of all hell getting ready to let loose. And then in November...
Oh, that's a cozy idea.
Well, certainly, yes. And then Sleep Quietly Tonight. Then November 4th sees the release of Doctor Strange. It's the character based in the Marvel Universe with the actor who's famous for playing the Sherlock character on the PBS series.
Yes. He also played that incredible villain in the reboot of Star Trek, Into Darkness.
Yes.
That I guess nobody but me liked. I mean, apparently the whole alternate universe of Star Trek nobody but me likes. Well, some people do, but... So, yeah, what's his name? Yes.
I always want to say Cumberbund, but it's not Cumberbund.
Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch,
yeah. He is brilliant. He is so incredibly brilliant. And, I mean, he is Sherlock. He is so Sherlock. Yes. Who was driven, Benedict Cumberbatch. Yes, thank you, Anne.
Yes, thank you.
So he's coming with Doctor Strange. Well, that takes us back in time again. All of these tentpole films, all of this stuff we're talking about, really is pointing back, even the election itself, with Trump wanting to take us back to a peaceful era of the 1950s. 19.5, anybody? Ding, ding, ding.
Yes, yes.
It's like that's where the timeline split. And we're on the wrong timeline. So it's how do we, there's a song in the back of my mind, how do we get back to where we once belonged?
Right. And then the reason why you had invited me on this show was to go back to this event that happened May 31st in Switzerland with the launching of this railway tunnel, a common ordinary railway tunnel.
Well, it is. Come on. The biggest 35 miles long under the Alps and all that. It's kind of a biggie. But what they did to celebrate its opening was downright Plutonian.
Yes.
It was so out of the netherworld, like something out of Dante's Inferno, like five levels down. And again, it's the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. These are the folks that really run the world, and they set up this messaging, this ceremony, to communicate something that I think is important to all the rest of us. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, to basically hear your analysis of this most bizarre EU ceremony.
Right. And as you can see on the little page that Em put together.
Okay, so we need to go to theothersideofmidnight.com, click on Radio with Pictures, scroll down to your items. Which one?
You're looking at the picture that has the black sun, the right of the black sun, and then the Shiva picture. And then come down to the bizarre video with the underwear wearing dancers.
Number four.
Yes.
Oh, one segment of the Gotthard Tunnel performance on June 1, 2016.
Right. And this little bit of the performance had a lot of people's panties in a bunch. Excuse the expression.
I think in Britain the term is knickers in a knot.
Knickers in a knot, yes. A lot of people looked at this and said, oh, look, they're performing some bizarre satanic sex orgy right there in the performance. But I looked at that and said, and I was watching the actual movements of the dancers, and I said, if that's a sexual ritual, then we know why the Swiss birth rate is so low.
Very good.
Those were not.
I would have said, looking at it, that it's a Hanes commercial.
It could be. Yeah, very good.
But okay, so what are we really looking at? What in the world did they do, and what are they sending, and what are the meanings behind these incredible symbols?
Right. Well, what I, as I was poking around, and I was noticing that there was an earlier movie last year, a very big production that the people at CERN, the Large Hadron Collider people, produced. And apparently every year they have a budget that's devoted to producing some sort of artistic production every year.
In connection with the world's largest atomic beam collider on the planet.
Right. And they had produced a movie called Symmetry. Now, I have not seen the whole movie Symmetry, but the trailers for it are freely available on YouTube. And this is a movie that I am dying to see.
I think we have a clickable version on the website tonight.
Yes.
Item number three. It's a two-minute promo trailer.
Right. It's the trailer, but boy.
For the one in 2015.
Yes, right. March 14th, as a matter of fact, it was premiered.
Well, of course, symmetry is the basis of what they call the standard model of physics today. Mm-hmm. So that's not much of a stretch. But given that you and I look like five layers down,
Right.
What do you think symmetry really means in this context?
Right. Well, when you watch the little trailer, there's a scene in there that is very similar to what was performed at the Goddard Tunnel with these dancers who are positioned in certain geometric positions. And the movie, if you, so I think some of the links here, I'm not sure. Anyway, the blog that I wrote about this, that can, that's one of our items, I think, right? Anyway, yes, number five.
Deborah peruses her items live on the air number in 152 five. Countries tonight.
Yeah. Number five is the blog I had written originally to summarize these items.
But instead of reading the blog, you're going to tell us live what you said.
Right. I noticed that this was a project through a website called thecreatorsproject.vice.com. There are sort of some notes about what was the idea behind the symmetry movie. And in the symmetry movie that CERN created, not the Goddard Tunnel, but the CERN people created, mm-hmm. they have this story. I'll just read from here. That the main character is someone who's looking for the unified field theory. So right away, that should raise, you know, flags right there. In the film, the character spins through the collider. He ends up in this mineral landscape, a pure monotone serene plane that transforms the sky above into a mirror image. So again, you get the as above, so below kind of right. And in this inner world, he grapples with the decision between infinite love and the smallest particle. And above that paragraph, it says, on a quest for a unifying theory, he is transported by this voice into an alternate dimension, a landscape of endless possibilities, where she teaches him about the timelessness of dance, music, and love.
And wait a minute, this is produced by the guys that are bringing you the world's largest atomic particle accelerator under the ground in Switzerland.
Right. Which means they're adding a very spiritual, metaphysical...
Well, yeah, something. They're talking about using that machine to crack separate dimensions.
Right.
Duh.
Yes, very much so. And
What else could it be?
Right.
I mean, look at how big it is, how powerful it is, and what does it do? It accelerates atomic particles in a circle. It makes them rotate.
Right.
What's the key to access to other dimensions in the hyperdimensional model? Rotation. So what does the CERN facility do to the torsion field when they crank her up? And again, are we looking at two tiers of science? The real science and then the fake science about smashing particles and counting little things on, you know, bubble tracks and all that.
Right.
How deep is the lie?
Right. And even I'm going to refer to some pages that Dr. Farrell wrote in his book, The Third Way, because he wrote an extensive 50-page chapter all about what he believes is going on at CERN with the Large Hadron Collider and the other detector machines. And it isn't just what's passing through the tunnel. I believe he mentioned somewhere in his chapter that there are other machines above the tunnel which are creating spinning plasmas at the time the tunnel is being activated.
And plasma, we know from Kozarev's work, is the quintessential way to create torsion. To basically modulate it, amplify it, beam it, do stuff with it technologically. So, again, is the CERN machine, for all its incredible expense, merely a super Potemkin village for what's really going on there?
Right.
A physics that no one's even breathing about.
Yes.
Except through these movies.
Right. Yeah, right, which is in our face. And, boy, the previews, you can find the previews for the Doctor Strange movie freely available on YouTube, or just watch it when they show it during the Olympics. But it's an obvious reference to exotic physics. I'm not even sure if they use the word magic in there. They are really talking about a way of altering reality and changing, you know, through the use of actual scientific, you know, ancient.
Does that sound vaguely familiar?
Yes, it does. Anyway, I was going to mention, oh, also in the Symmetry movie, the idea of this character, this central scientific character, is that his goal is to become one with the particle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that gambit. The one with the particle gambit. Okay.
Which reminds me of, you know, Luke. What Dr. Farrell has written about with alchemy. People think of alchemy as just, you know, trying to change matter into gold. But in alchemy, it's also the person who's performing the alchemical experiment is in the process of transforming himself as part of it. So that
the whole lead into gold thing at several different levels, the highest being consciousness transmuted from lead, draw stuff, to gold, the hyperdimensional access to basic infinity.
Right. Now, I was going to refer to something that Dr. Farrell wrote in his book, The Third Way, on page 232 and 233, because he mentioned perpendicular gravitational waves. And when he wrote the word perpendicular, that's what reminded me of these geometric movements of the dancers in the Symmetry movie and in the Goddard Tunnel movie, because there's certain movements where they're raising the dancer's partner is being raised to a 90-degree angle.
By the way, did you ever measure in your copious period of time Hitler's Heil salute?
Oh, very good point. No, I haven't, but now that you mention it.
I have, and repeatedly, it's so close to 19.5, isn't even funny.
Oh, that's amazing.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't, as the church lady would say, isn't that
isn't
special?
That special? Right. Okay, well, anyway, in Dr. Farrell's book, The Third Way, he mentions, I'm quoting from his book, he says at the bottom of page 232, the collider, or the Large Hadron Collider, is really a machine of planetary scale, effect, and influence. For by colliding particle beams, each of which contain protons, or worse, heavy lead ions, zipping along at nearly the velocity of light, means, according to these theorists, that they are, and now he's quoting from another one of his copious footnotes, he says, essentially equivalent to the singularity of a Kerr black hole, and maybe you can fill us in what a Kerr black hole is, a rotating...
Spelled K-E-R-R.
R-R, right.
Pronounced
like
Kerr. Kerr.
Like the actress.
Yes, like the actress. Except Kerr. You don't pronounce it that way. It's Kerr.
Kerr. A Kerr black hole. A rotating C-speed charged ring of mass. Since a Kerr singularity can produce transversal gravitational waves, the Large Hadron Collider might produce, here it comes, perpendicular gravitational waves that will sink straight towards the center of the Earth. If so, these gravitational waves, which are undetectable, will affect magnetic fields, provoking earthquakes, waves, and increased volcano activity.
Okay, hold on, because the obverse is also true. If certain oligarchs are worried that the planet's going to tip over, which we know they are, I've been monitoring a series of technologies, HARP is one, CERN is potentially another, that in fact are not doing their best to make it tip over, they're doing their best to stop it from tipping over. Again, you wouldn't tell people that because then they would go, what, the world's going to tip over? Bernie, where's my money? That kind of thing. So you don't want to let anybody know that that is one thing they're doing. So you layer it down between four layers of obfuscation and cover stories. And remember that weird time travel thing, the guy that appeared at CERN and was going to create a black hole? Chris Knowles, who is one of our movie symbologists, does the Secret Sun website. You got to go look at the Secret Sun. Mm-hmm. He says that any time you see a symbolic war erupt in the public, look for the meaning two levels down, like this whole thing with Trump and the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. Forget that and look deeper, and that's what we're going to do tomorrow night. I think we have figured out what Donald Trump is up to with that specific reference, and it comes off something that Jim Maher said earlier in the week. That was the week that was. So,
right. Well, then I was noticing a little further on in his chapter on page 258, Dr. Farrell was very much alarmed by the fact that the collider and the ALICE detector are able to produce a magnetic field strength that is 15,000 times larger than the field strength of Earth's magnetic field.
Okay. But, of course, it's only over the size of a coffee table or something.
Right.
No, I mean, really. I don't think we should worry. We should worry about the torsion waves created and what they're doing.
Right.
See, that's, again, you're looking at CERN, I'm looking at CERN as a huge, big torsion wave generator using plasmas like the Priori device. Mm-hmm. Need to get somebody on to talk about the Priori device some night. I've asked Robin to actually do a little digging on that. And anyway, that's a kind of a diversion. So if these are technologies that are being hidden because if we were told their real use, we'd all freak out. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a certain logic to that. Why would you tell people something that's inevitable if there's nothing you can do to stop it? And if the best effort you're doing might work and it might not work, I mean, it wouldn't do them any good to know there's nothing they can do.
Mm-hmm.
But for those of us that are trying to be aware of possibilities, the signs are there that, again, things are not as we have been told. Surprise, surprise.
Right.
Okay, right. We are at the bottom of the hour.
Wow.
Already, yes. And I hear music playing, and if I go to what I need, I can maybe find out what it is. Ah. Witchy woman. Great way to go out. I think someone is trying to say something about you, Deborah. Well, on that note, you're on the other side of midnight where almost anything goes as long as we can broadcast it via the FCC. My name is Richard Z. Hoagland, and we shall return, witchy woman.
In the night, she's a restless spirit on an endless flight. Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies.
Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see,
I guess, the muted strains from Willy Wonka. Imagination. You know, what we're really talking about, Deborah, is two polarizations, two sides, the bad guys and all the rest of us. And the physics says that, you can play the music behind us, the physics says that if we do this right, imagination, the creative power of conscious thought, can create the world we really want to live in. We can't live in the one we're in now. I mean, give me a break. So we need to harness... pure imagination.
This way, Grandpa.
I mean, that's why movies exist, to show us models for things that we can't conceive of on our own.
There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.
That gives me chills. So where do we want to go to next? There's a lot of things to do and not much time.
I want to go back, or we'll mention something you just said about pure imagination, and there's a relationship between pure imagination and pure energy.
Yes.
And there, I had an interesting conversation with one of the members of the RogueMoney.net team, someone that I think you know. We refer to him by the initial W.
Yes, Mr. W.
Yes, he and I had a conversation that was, we were talking about human thoughts and where exactly does consciousness exist? And most people think of your thoughts as existing in your brain. And we know there are electromagnetic impulses that are working in the brain to create and store your thoughts and your memories. And what he was saying is, really, your brain, your skull does not contain those impulses. They, once you think them, they're out in the ether.
Literally, there is an ether, the torsion field. We've measured it. It exists.
Right. And that's what he was saying, is that all human consciousness is existing at the level of these subatomic particles, where the quarks
and the Teilhard de Chardin, who was a very famous Catholic philosopher of the, I think, the last century, 20th century, he coined this term, the new sphere, the consciousness sphere.
Yes.
That's what we're talking
about. That. We haven't been talking about that for a long time.
No, it's overdue.
Yes, it is. Yes, that was a very big deal in Sedona.
Yes.
Talking about that. He made a really interesting observation. He said how it is that everybody's consciousness gets hooked up with the right person, like I'm not tapped in consciously to your consciousness, is through our DNA. And he mentioned that the strands of the DNA are shaped not like the letter X, but more like the letter Y. And the arms of the Y are like a tuning fork, so that your DNA is tuned to the frequency of your consciousness, which is in
That's kind of freaky, because the Accutron is based on a tuning fork that's resonating with the field to change its inertia, to change its frequency as the field changes around it. So, interesting, W. Very interesting. Now, W, remember, is a deep, deep, deep secret source who actually has access through the Rockefellers and some other folks to some really interesting, and I can't use that word on the radio. So just kind of imagine, all right? But when this guy talks, you know, it's like E.F. Hutton. People kind of lean over from the next table to listen, because sometimes, you know, not all the time, but sometimes W is onto it.
Yes. Well, and that's what I'm thinking about, is whatever is being done at CERN with all this experimentation and researching about the fields, that they're probably going beyond just, you know, creating some sort of super weapon. They are really
This is all part of a continuum over the last decades. I mean, the French were doing this. Do you remember when the French suddenly out of nowhere said, oh, wait, we got to join the nuclear club, and we have to bang off nuclear weapons in the middle of the totally unknown South Pacific next to an island no one had ever heard of? And I'm having dinner with a very, very powerful guy who I won't mention because he does not need to be mentioned. He's turned his attention to the dark side of the force, I hate to say it. Mm. But he comes rushing into this Japanese restaurant in Boulder, Colorado. We were kind of having a meeting. And he said, do you know where the French are banging off their nuclear weapons? And he pulled out this diagram, and it was precisely, exactly, Deborah, precise to within feet of exactly the other side of the Earth. If you go a line through there into the center of the Earth, out the other side, right through the Great Pyramid at Giza. So the French were using, in fact, I think all the nuclear tests were, again, under the cover of one thing, the Cold War and us going to war with the Russians and all that was fiction, so they could use these super technologies to basically explore the hyperdimensional torsion realm of the planet, like plucking at a spider web to see how it rings, how it resonates, and how the ancient technology was positioned to use it, to manipulate it, to amplify it, to be, as Joseph says, some kind of technology, or Chris Dunn, some kind of technology. Got to get those two guys together on the show so they can find out which technology. But, you know, the pyramids are machines. I've measured them now. I know what they're machines to do. The fact that the French were using their nuclear test program as a cover to figure out on the other side of the planet how that machine would resonate with a thermonuclear explosion. I mean, that's the level of playing God where we are tonight, except we're not supposed to know that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're playing with reality, with a capital R.
Right.
And we're not supposed to know. Right. We're to buy the cover story. Like, it's possible, I don't want to, you know, get anybody really upset, but it's possible that this coming election is the last election, and they know it. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so silly and so absurd and not really real about anything, because they know they're just going through the motions. And when Donald Trump is not spending any money on television against $80, $90 million from Hillary, what does that tell you? It tells you it's fixed. You know, when he keeps saying it's fixed, it's rigged, he's giving us double and triple messages, folks. I think ultimately at some deep level, and it's all because this other stuff is a facade, Donald Trump, I'm going to say it tonight, is somehow trying to break the system open, destroy the Republican Party, which is about to destroy the Republic if it kept going the way it was going, and basically blow the system up so we can all put it back together. And he's giving out clues, multiple clues. And we're going to talk about a few of the clues tomorrow night, that this, in fact, is what his real, real agenda is. So it's like, don't look at what I'm saying, look at what I'm saying.
Right. Right. I will say, among the people I write with, that it is, well, it's my opinion at least, and some of the others, is that Donald Trump is the person who is picked and desired to become president by China. And we know that whoever it is that does win the presidency is going to be the president who will be sitting over the largest economic collapse that this country has ever gone through. And there's no way to stop that.
Are you sure?
The
way to stop it is simply to change the rules of the game. I mean, he's changed all the rules of the election.
Right.
So why can't other rules be changed? They're all just kind of, you know, arbitrary anyway. The thing is, can we have a soft landing, or does civilization have to really crash and burn and billions of people die as a result because it's so delicately balanced now? Or can we navigate between Scylla and Charybdis, those ancient Greek monsters, one which was a whirlpool, a vortex, a hyperdimensional funnel? I mean, the myths are constantly filled with all this imagery. If Trump represents the side that I think is trying to save all of us, it's kind of like burning down the village to save it. Because look at what he's doing. I mean, the Republican Party is going to go down like a streamlined anvil if he continues doing what he's doing. And then you'll say, well, he's throwing it to Hillary. Not if Hillary's not, as I've said for a year, going to be the candidate. If this ultimate surprise is, yes, he's tossing the election, but not to whom you would possibly conceive of receiving it.
Right. Now, I would ask you, would it be such a bad thing if there was an economic crash, if we're talking about putting an end to a debt-backed economic system?
Yeah, the problem is a lot of people die if that happens.
Yes.
I mean, just think of the cascade, because you're looking at economic systems, you're looking at support systems, you're looking at electrical systems. You only have to lose electrical power for a week and all your food rots, and then people are basically raiding supermarkets, which are gone in a day. In other words, we're so fragilely balanced that you can't really do anything major without it having terrible negative downsides and side effects.
Right.
It's how do you sculpt a safe landing? The only way to do that is to change consciousness. And the only way to do that is to reveal things that are so much bigger than anybody is conceiving of. A game changer. That's what I and my colleagues are working on. This stuff in the solar system, all this data that we're not the first, that there's technology all over. If that window was opened, the market reaction to stunning physics and technology and machines they could sell at Kmart would lift, I'm serious, would lift this economy, the world economy, to heights you can't imagine. Because what is technology but ultimately better ways to manipulate the environment so that human beings can live more human lives?
Right.
And if that was opened, if that doorway was opened, and it's interesting to me that Joseph Farrell thinks behind the scenes that this is what's really backing this two-tiered set of currency, that these various indications, these hints that there's a second economic system with vast resources, like all the gold mined in the world is supposed to be by 1,500 tons. And then you multiply by whatever the cost is per ton, you know, the price is, and then you get the kind of value of all the gold ever mined in history. And sources, you know, the Indonesians have a different number, the Vatican has a different number, but it's around a few thousand tons. According to some of these Barabanov scandals, which have erupted over the last 3 or 4 years, you have evidence of you know, paper and paper against gold totaling something like 800,000 tons of gold. Where are the possibly now? He thinks maybe gold is a metaphor for drugs. I think gold is a metaphor for gold, because that much gold is only found in the solar system, like mining asteroids. What are the asteroids? Well, in the Van Flandern model, a lot of the asteroids and comets are basically pieces of a planet that was blown to kingdom come by a technology, a torsion field weapons technology, 66 mm-hmm. million years ago. The core, which is where the heavy elements would sink when the planet was formed billions of years ago, would be splattered into space, and then a spaceship appropriately equipped, sidling up to one of those, could mine a million tons of gold. Now, if you don't acknowledge that exists in the world, if remember, it's all about consciousness, it's all about perception. Politics is 99.99% perception. If you don't reveal that you've got this huge store of gold, you, by your terrestrial standards, have an infinite amount of money. Infinite amount of money translates to infinite power, infinite control, and there's been some real hiccup now in paradise because the factions seem to be fighting among themselves and divulging the secrets among themselves to all the rest of us. So something is not right, which means something is right for all the rest of us. At least that's how I interpret it.
Right. Well, I think most of us would agree we need to find a way to not even have to be dealing with money. I would like to see the word debt even eliminated from our language. There should never be a reason for debt to be imposed on another living thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, I wrote a blog a few months ago with the title was Free Flowing Prosperity. And I even referred to the paper you wrote so long ago about Wernher von Braun and the launch of that satellite.
Oh, Explorer 1.
Right, Explorer 1. And how he realized, you know, as a result of what happened there, that there was extra energy being created that he could. Well, I had picked up on that because of something I learned in my vineyard cultivation class had to do with something the instructor had written in his book that he noticed that grapevines, when they are, they call it layered. It's a way of connecting the root of or a branch from one vine to the vine next to it. He noticed that extra energy.
Wait, you mean they are physically spliced together?
In a way, yeah, I had a picture of it.
Or grafted together, I should say.
Yeah, it's not exactly grafting, but what happens is you take the shoot of one grapevine and you drape it down, and you let it root with the one next to it. So in a way, that becomes sort of the mother vine, and it's feeding the next vine.
Okay.
And you would think, you know, according to the typical banker model, you would think that the energy is being drained off the mother vine and that it would suffer some sort of a loss while it's feeding the child grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was that both of the vines became extra productive.
Well, because it's what is life? Life is this interesting thing in the torsion field.
Right,
they become amplifying antennas.
Right. When we're allowed to tap in to the free energy that's all around us, there is abundant prosperity, there's no need for debt at all.
See, that's the reality of the universe. We've been living in this artificial, restricted, closed system reality, as Joseph says. You know, we got an open system versus closed system. How do we get from a closed system to an open system? That's what I'm looking at. That's what I'm looking at in terms of technologies, in terms of myths. I mean, we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. There's no money ever mentioned in Star Trek.
Right.
When you go to the replicator, it doesn't say, you know, $25, please. I'm counting for inflation. You just press the button or you simply talk to it and bingo. Where does all that come from? Well, many years ago on a road trip from Goddard, where I was invited to speak, and Jerry O'Neill, the space colony guy from Princeton, was invited to speak, I was privileged to ride back to Princeton with him in the car, and it's several hours from Goddard up to Princeton. So we had one heck of a lot of time to talk. And I was talking about the future of economics and the kind of basis of what is economics. Forget things like credit balances and debentures and, you know, credit swaps and defaults and all that. Reduce it to its elements.
Right.
Economics it rests on almost like a three-legged stool. It's kind of like a tetrahedron. It's energy, resources, the energy used to make resources, make things out of them. And the third part of the triad is information. If you don't have the information, you don't know what to use the energy to turn the resources into something that's useful. So that's the basis of all economies. Everything else is artifice because that's the basis of physics. Now, if you have an unlimited amount of energy, an unlimited amount of materials, what do you do to that equation? You increase information exponentially to where it's almost unlimited. Right. In other words, that's the key to releasing the human race from bondage, the prison planet that Jones very artfully mm-hmm. makes reference to the world we should be living in, the world in the 1950s we were looking forward, the world of tomorrow. What's the echoing theme in all those Marvel movies? They've done it again and again and again. Tony Stark's, you know, father mm-hmm. is like a Walt Disney character doing these expos to show how technology would ultimately free everyone, lift everyone up, that kind of thing.
Right. Now, I will mention, in fact, Dr. Farrell mentioned something a long time ago. I think it's either in his book, Babylon's Banksters, or The Philosopher's Stone, or possibly in an interview he did with George Ann Hughes. We all know the common story about the man, J.P. Morgan, and Nikola Tesla, and how J.P. Morgan pulled his funding of Nikola Tesla's work when he found out that Tesla wanted to provide free energy. Mm. And supposedly Morgan pulled the financing when he realized he wouldn't be able to put a meter in everybody's yard. Now, Farrell mentioned he played sort of like devil's advocate on that story and said, what if J.P. Morgan pulled his funding up from Tesla's because he saw the danger of that technology or felt that mankind wouldn't be able to handle the dangerous side of that technology? So that would be something we would have to think mm-hmm. about instead of rushing headlong into, you know, providing, letting everyone tap into something that could be potentially dangerous.
Well, that's an interesting spin. Gosh, mm-hmm. Him as a good guy. Wow.
I know.
let me think about that. That's kind of mind-boggling. Okay, mm-hmm. let me give you another example, which was echoed, by the way, in one of my favorite films of all time, released by MGM and an amalgam of studios, including Disney, the original Disney, mm-hmm. Forbidden Planet.
Oh, yeah.
Forbidden Planet is an archetypal veiled reference mm-hmm. to the dangers of right. releasing unfettered science and technology on us primitive humans. Right. It's the whole archetype of the story. It's supposed to be derivative from Shakespeare, but I think it's light years. I think Shakespeare was derivative from the real story, which, of course, is the story of humankind. Did we do this to ourselves? Or all the ancient stuff we're finding out there is, in fact, that we were so damn stupid in this pre-incarnation that we basically blew ourselves to kingdom come, and now we're reduced to these poor, scrabbling primitives on one tiny planet in a galaxy of trillions of options and possibilities, and we're kept from knowing who we are because we're so damn stupid we don't deserve to know who we used to be.
Right. Right. Well, I suppose we would need to have some sort of consensus or some committee or let's think about who would we set up to be monitoring or regulating, you know, how mankind advances to that level.
Well, we don't have much time. I mean, you know, there was a film back in the 1930s called Of Things to Come mm-hmm. with Raymond Massey.
Okay.
Remember that? Oh, classic. Mm-hmm. He's all dressed in black, and he's got these aircraft and spaceships, and they mm-hmm. basically wings over the world. We're coming up to crunch time. And it really, to me, in my model I've been building for decades, it's either up or down. It's either the stars or, you know, the pit. We don't have much wiggle room anymore, and the time is running out. So if that's true, then we need all the input we can get, and we're asking for input right now. Hailing frequencies open to Dr. Joseph Farrell. Let's hope he picks up. And that will take us to the top of the hour, and we'll come back from the station break, and so we'll bring Joseph on at the top of the hour. So between now and then, when do we want to get into analyze? Let's wait for the tunnel thing till Joseph joins us.
Okay.
Because I'm sure that he will have some interesting things to say.
Oh, yes.
So in the couple of minutes before the top of the hour, to me, the key to changing what we've been doing is for everyone to kind of figure out it's not working. And whether you're a Trumpster or you're a Bernie guy or even Hillary. I mean, Hillary's promising all kinds of change, and the people behind her are looking for her change message, not her status quo message. So everybody wants to change. That's the first step toward a consensus that change is crucial. So then it's how do we get there? And that's where politics, traditional three-dimensional politics, comes in. The problem is that none of the candidates that we see are capable of negotiating in real politics that kind of change. Or am I whistling up the wrong tree? So you agree?
Yes.
Okay. Darren wants to join the conversation. Let's bring Darren on before we go to the break. Good morning, Darren. You're on the other side of midnight.
Do you have a second for a couple meteor questions?
Meteor questions. Okay. Meteor questions. Yes. Go for it.
Okay. We come out every summer, and this summer they're long and they're big and they're orange. How big are those?
How bright?
Really bright. Like a fifth. They're going across like a fifth of the sky.
Okay. When you say bright, give me bright as a full moon, bright as a distant street lamp.
Like a street lamp.
Okay. They're sand size.
Sand. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Now, if I see one here, would you see the same one where you guys are?
It depends. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, because of parallax and all that. If they're high enough, they're about 80 miles high when they enter the atmosphere. So you can see the same meteor from two different widely separated, I think from 80 miles, the horizon distance is like 100, 150 miles, something like that. So maybe 300 miles across in a circle, you could see the same meteor at the same time if you were looking in exactly the same direction at the same moment.
Well, I encourage everybody to get outside. We're out in the backyard with my kids, and it's just incredible.
Oh, my gosh, you're narrating live.
Yes. Well, yeah, we're sitting in the backyard right now. You hear the crickets? Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, it's great. Everyone should get outside. This is an amazing shower this year.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, we've got 30-second break coming up, so everybody can run with their devices outside, look up, and then, you can stay outside because it's nice and warm here. Patrick, it is about 68 degrees, very low humidity in the Land of Enchantment, and a gorgeous first quarter moon.
Once in my life, I have someone who needs me, someone I've needed so long. For once, unafraid, I can go where life leads me, and somehow I know strong.
My gosh, that is so cool.
For once
in our life, Tony Bennett. Good morning, Joseph. Welcome to the conversation. I guess your ears were burning.
Well, actually, no, they weren't. I got an email from your producer, and she said, call in. So I did.
Yeah. I wrote a paper once when I worked at CBS for my producer. And I wrote this paper about how producers really think they're God, and they cannot resist the concept of meddling. In this case, meddling worked very, very nicely. So, Joseph, do you kind of get the gist of what we've been talking about? Did she brief you?
I haven't a clue of what you've been.
Okay, Deborah, you're up. All right. Since you've been quoting freely.
Dr. Farrell, it's awful nice of you to come on two nights this week.
The Bankster Slayer and Joseph Farrell. Another one.
We were talking about the Goddard Tunnel ceremony from back on June 1st and the fact that the movements in it reminded me of the movie Symmetry that the CERN people put out a year ago. And I have been dying to ask you, were you ever able to watch that movie Symmetry?
No, I haven't.
Thank you, Joseph.
I saw pictures of the ceremony at the tunnel.
Right.
And I thought they were, in the modern European wacky New Age neo-Gnostic nonsense way,
right.
Goofy. I was more appalled at the ceremony that they held at Verdun to commemorate the 100th anniversary of that horrible slaughter. Basically, they gave a ceremony that was just, I don't know what it was, but I can't imagine a bunch of Christian Germans and Frenchmen wanting their memory to be celebrated like right. It was there. It was just bizarre.
Well, where we were going with the movie Symmetry is I was noticing in some of the ballet movements that they positioned the dancers at certain right angles and perpendicular angles. It was all very geometric to me. And the blog notes of the movie Symmetry are about turning the dance of the particles into a ballet, and the whole story. The central scientist of the story is looking for the unified field theory, and he needs to become one with the particle and discover the love of the universe.
Well, better.
You know, it's a complete alchemical, you know, operation, and that's what I was quoting some of the pages from your book, The Third Way, the big mm-hmm. long chapter you wrote about CERN, and mm-hmm. When I saw that the characters were pointed at perpendicular angles, it reminded me of your comments you had made about the perpendicular gravitational waves mm-hmm. and how your thoughts that what they could possibly be doing at CERN is creating these fields that can trigger huge earthquakes. And mm-hmm. now Richard doesn't think that there's too much danger of what's going on.
No, I didn't say that. I said that technologies can have two uses. One mm-hmm. is to create chaos, and the other, in terms of the physics we're talking about, to suppress chaos, to create mm-hmm. order. And it all depends on who's pulling the switches. I want you to think about what else is at CERN that we don't know about. Someone mentioned plasmas, and that mm-hmm. pricked up my attention. Mm-hmm. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. My guest this morning, Deborah Carruthers. And surprise, hyperdimensional drop-in, Joseph Farrell. And we shall return.
Falling in love was the last thing I had on my mind. Holding you is a warmth that I thought I could never find. Just trying to decide. I'll stay by your side.
Well, well, well. Baby, it's time. And yes, baby, it is time. And that's what our conversation is this morning. It's time. Okay, cue the Zippo. Joseph is with us. Okay, Deborah, the yes. tunnels. Give us the context for the tunnel.
Okay, the Goddard Base Tunnel is a railway tunnel that was built through the Alps in Switzerland. It is primarily to assist them in delivering a cargo by rail. It is being used also as a passenger train, but they needed a faster, easier way to transport cargo through these cities. And anyone who's read Dr. Farrell's other books, these three cities will resonate: Rotterdam, Basel, and Genoa. This is like the ultimate bankster, you know, highway. Speaking of highway, doesn't that all connect now to the One Road, One Belt project, the Silk Road project that China and Russia are building through Eurasia? They're looking for a way to connect all this overland rail and merchant and commercial transport that will link everything from the United Kingdom all the way over to Japan.
Well, you know, our source W that you mentioned in the last yes. segment, mm-hmm. he and I have talked often about the sub-shuttles that go between the East and the West Coast, you know, like maybe a half a mile down, that mm-hmm. connect the invisible deep state, literally. Mm-hmm. Gene Roddenberry, in his sequel to Star Trek, when Star Trek went off the air NBC, Gene, of course, like any producer, had to look at other projects. So he created something called Earth 2, which was Earth after a conflagration, after a nuclear war. Right. And the high-tech parts of society were connected all over the world by this underground super shuttle program, which was kind of like the transporter in Star Trek. The super mm-hmm. shuttle underground became that Deus Ex Machina for Earth 2, so that the teams could go to any place on Earth within a reasonable hour, 1 hour of TV time, and pop into a regressive culture community that was doing something weird, or someone had found technology they were going to turn into some weapon of mass. In other words, whatever the plot called for. And the sub-shuttle was based, I believe now, on data that Gene actually had on the real shuttle system, which exists, which has been dug by, among other things, nuclear-powered underground tunnel borers. Mm-hmm. And so this whole thing about the Goddard Tunnel, to me, is like just the tip of the cliched iceberg, representing all of this tunnel structure, which is getting ready for what?
If it's involving the Silk Road Project, then that means there is this new world order, you know, kind of network being kind of merged and built to finally achieve what they've been wanting to do for hundreds of years, you know, achieve some sort of large-scale global unified trade alliance.
Mm-hmm. Well, may I interject here?
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's what a conversation about the Bing Green Table means.
Well, the way I've looked at it is that it looks to me that they're getting ready for something. Why would you have an extensive underground infrastructure?
Yes.
The preparations here have all the hallmarks to me of military preparations. Mm-hmm. Dispersion of manufacture, securing your lines of communication and logistics. So all of this tells me that they're getting ready for something military. The question is, what?
Oh,
what about
if a breakaway civilization suddenly appears on every radar screen a la Independence Day?
Well, that's precisely what I think is happening. I think they're getting ready for something like that, or to stage something like that, or they might actually suspect that our cousins from ancient times might be coming back.
I thought you left it on call. Look what happened when you let me go to sleep. That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Your experiment is a failure. You're an F. Go right. Flush it down the drain. Get the mice.
From what I understand, this Goddard Tunnel is just part of a more extensive network. They're still working on other tunnels, I think.
But again, the system I was told about was not supposed to be acknowledged. It's supposed to exist. It was built in the 50s and 60s with unlimited money. Remember, if the Russians were up to something, we would do anything. With that kind of mindset, you can do anything, particularly if you have an off-world source of money. Mm-hmm. So do you we were talking in before you joined us that, you know, you and I were discussing how much gold there is in the world, and these mm-hmm. these weird bearer bonds showing up backed by mm-hmm. astronomical, pun intended, amounts of gold. Mm-hmm. And you and I talked about, was gold a euphemism for drugs, or was it actually gold, in which case, yes, you're mining asteroids and there's unlimited amounts out there. If you keep the system separate and you're kind of dipping into the system down here, that amount of gold allows you to do anything because no one really knows it's real.
That's right. Well, I've said all along that this hidden system of finance that I've been trying to outline in various books, I think, was collateralized by space. In other words, they made the Venetian bankers deal very, very early on.
Okay, but, for those folks that are not history buffs,
if you recall what the Venetian bankers did, they would float loans to the merchants to go and trade in the East, bring back spices, bring back mm-hmm. slaves, and so on and so forth.
Are we talking Marco Polo?
Marco Polo, yeah, mm-hmm. Venetian spy. but basically, what they would do is they would finance this for a share of the action. So in other words, the collateral for these loans was, in fact, whatever you brought back. I think this is the way that system was set up after World War II. They leveraged an enormous amount of money. They created a huge secret system of liquidity and basically created a financial system that would be the equivalent of a Kardashev class one planetary scale system in terms of the financing. And to collateralize all this, they collateralized whatever they would find out in space, be it commodities, artifacts, technology, and so on. That's what I think they did.
I think you're 100% right. That's when Lear kept talking about mining on the moon. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole concept mm-hmm. of mining, the whole Stephen Hawking's kind of responding that we might encounter marauding 19th century model space miners. Give me a break. Either you're going to mine knowledge and technology accrued by our great, 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 great grandmothers, i.e. the libraries, mm-hmm. or you're going to find the technology to create matter in any form, in any shape and fashion, in any quantity out of the ether itself back to Forbidden Planet. So with that godlike technology, You can feed the primitives, us down here, this economic system, and manipulate it any way you want because your economy is so bigger and so subsumes what we think of as the world economy, it's not even a blip.
Exactly. And the other thing about it is, as you pointed out, if you're going to create a system that is an open system, both physically and financially. If you're going to do that, then the world economy, which is a global closed system, is going to be profoundly swamped by the larger one and the hidden one. So I think this is what's playing out in modern times, because I think this hidden system is gradually coming to light. I think it's being wound into the public in some way or form. I think the Barabanov scandals were our first little glimpse of it. There's been a lot of other stuff happening recently too that I think indicates this hidden system is coming more and more out into the open.
You know, the thing that's so stark in reading your book, the Covert Wars and Breakaway Civilization, is like you have a very crucial and simple statement in the book, which is so profound, it makes the case. It proves the case that this is all the tip of a very hidden, interesting story. You do not counterfeit and try to sell on the open market that which does not exist, period.
Right, right.
You counterfeit only that which is accepted by somebody.
Yep.
In which case, the counterfeit is as good as the real because it tells you the real is real.
Yeah, it tells you the real exists. These bearer bonds that we've been told are fake, the billion-dollar denominated bearer bonds that we've told are fake.
$1 billion carried in your wallet, the size of a dollar bill.
Yeah, $1 billion.
$1 billion.
Yeah, that these are all fake. Well, again, why would you go to all the trouble to run these scams and do so repeatedly?
Hang on. Someone asked a question. What is a bond?
Well, a bond, a bearer bond in particular, is a bond issued for a certain amount of money that pays interest on that principal over a certain amount of time. And it comes with little coupons that you clip off and redeem for your share of the interest when that comes due. In the case of a bearer bond or any type of bearer bond, the bond is not issued to someone by name. In other words, physical possession of the instrument is what gives you the legal authority to trade that instrument.
Yep. So possession is 90% of the law comes from that.
Yep.
Wow.
Exactly.
So next time I find a billion-dollar bearer bond lying on the street, if I get it, it's mine.
Well, yes, but I would caution you, if you do find one, don't tell anybody and don't try to redeem it, because the people that do that end up in jail.
Except they don't.
In many cases, they do.
Well, one of the big stories out of Switzerland, I think, was they found these Japanese guys with, what, trillions of dollars in a suitcase, and they let them go.
It was $134.5 billion, and they did let them go. But the other two big bearer bond stories, they did not.
Oh.
And there's a famous case of Sam Israel that I wrote about in Breakaway Civilizations. Anyway, I didn't want to get sidetracked here from what Deborah was trying to talk about with the tunnel.
Well, this is all the backdrop to what the hell they're doing, because if we're seeing these shifts around and these celebrations as kind of like before the next phase, what do they think the next phase is for, that they need to bury themselves in the ground, amass a huge amount of money? I think I had an insight, Joseph. What if the whole Clinton scandal has nothing to do with Bill and Hillary personally amassing their own wealth, but using the foundation to accrue as much resources as possible for when the you-know-what hits the big rotating receptacle?
That might be. Or they're trying to buy their way into that group of people that run that hidden show. I don't know.
Remember, during Bill's presidency, the bizarre stuff around the Denver airport went down.
Oh, yeah.
So remember the whole travel office and all that little misdirection?
Sure do.
They've been involved in this, I think, from the beginning. And the whole Clinton Foundation was an off-books to and including the server. How can you tell in those emails, those 33,000 emails, if they're actually talking about their perception of the coming end of the world?
That's a possible scenario. I would personally think that a certain segment of that global elite that's been running that system would not be too happy to have the Clintons involved. I think that there would be some misgivings on some of their part. But anyway, I didn't want to get distracted from Deborah and the Goddard tunnel.
No, that was pretty much it, because the tunnel is being built for commercial purposes. So you know that there's
ostensibly. Again, everything is a front, and then what's the real story?
You make a good point. If it is just a commercial project, then why did they weave in all this stuff that obviously comes from the CERN?
Okay, let me give an example of what I think might have happened. Mm-hmm. If civilization, Joseph and Deborah, on this planet is not thousands of years old, but millions, mm-hmm. how much has been built that is literally buried under mountains like the Alps?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
And if you dig a tunnel, you either dig it knowing what's there, or you dig a tunnel hoping to find something that's there, or you dig it totally obliviously designed to basically just do what you think you're doing, and by accident you trip over something astonishing. Mm-hmm. I think we can remove that last possibility, which means they were celebrating not just the completion of the economic tunnel, but all that I just said that it might represent in terms of what they found halfway in.
I do find it odd, like Deborah's pointed out, that the ceremony seemed to have ties to CERN. I find that very, very odd.
Okay, so let's get to the actual video, the actual movie.
The part about the dancers who were in I call them the underwear dancers.
Right.
That was a very short segment of it where they're... And that seemed to be a mirror image of a portion from the Symmetry movie. But then as the program proceeded, then you have this strange goat man figure who seems to dominate the rest of the performance. He's like a central character. For those of us who follow this stuff, it has all this Baphomet imagery, or as Joseph wrote about in the 9/11 book, the pet goat figure at the end of the child's storybook that President Bush was reading on the morning of 9/11. You know, I don't know what to make of all the rest of that, because there is a lot of pagan imagery, or there's a character in a red dress. At the very end of the show, she's being depicted as being pregnant, and that may have something to do with the Olympics ceremonies, which I'm sure you're going to talk about tomorrow, sounds mm-hmm. like.
Yes.
There does seem to be a lot of this imagery about something being born.
So what I'm doing is I'm playing in the background, and you got this strange music. I've got all these orange-suited, jumpsuited people, which I presume are the miners, the workers.
Right.
Marching out of the tunnel to the extremely select audience that's kind of an audience in one. Talk about a command performance. There were, what, maybe 100 people or so in the audience?
Oh, yeah. It was very small figure, you know, and they're all dressed up in suits. I notice almost all the suits are the same color, almost. They're all dark colors. And we have the three leaders of France, Germany, and Italy are present. And I noticed also that the security didn't seem very tight. For having those three leaders there... I mean, if someone like Obama was there, you'd have swarms of, you know, security. But this seemed almost like a family event, like a little gala celebration. There's popping champagne, and
most exclusive party in the world.
Right. Like there was no question that their security was assured. Now there was an outdoor part. There's this part that what you're watching is indoors, but then I think, from what I could understand from the Russia TV program, because it was all in German, like another performance was being done either outside or at the other end of the tunnel. I'm not sure, but there was an outdoor portion and a big outdoor projection screen with a lot of visual images, and that's where I caught images that reminded me of the Black of the Reich sun geometric shape. And then at the end, you see there's, for quite a few seconds, there's a section where there's a giant clock with the hands of the clock are spinning, rotating, and counter-rotating.
And
there, yes.
Rotation.
And even counter-rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a scene in the CERN movie Symmetry of a spinning wristwatch, of the hands spinning forward and backward.
Oh, I love it.
Yes, I knew you'd like that.
Okay, we got a shot here of, you're right, all those dignitaries all sitting in black suits and black ties, and the women are all very...
Yeah.
And it's not your normal audience. It's like they're passing in review... Passed a very, very, very elite review committee.
Mm-hmm.
How did they sell this in Europe? How did they explain this? Well, we're just all having fun celebrating our new tunnels.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, that's all it was. Nobody was making a big deal about it. And it's funny watching the expressions on the faces of the people. They don't. Once in a while, you see someone who seems a little perturbed at what they're watching, but for the most part, they're all very approving of it.
Are you watching this, Joseph?
No, I can't, actually.
Yeah.
Oh. If you go to theothersideofmidnight.com and scroll down, Radio with Pictures, item number 4, one segment of the Goddard Tunnel performance from June 1, 2016.
Well, I have seen pictures and a few brief videos.
It's choreographed down to the microsecond. It's complex.
Yeah,
it's a big performance that would be worthy of like a Super Bowl show.
Yeah, halftime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was this sent by satellite all over the world, or was it restricted to this audience and then they put out the video afterwards?
You know, it was done live, and Russia Today still maintains the full 5-hour. You know, they recorded not just the show, but they kept a camera running just to show all the dignitaries arriving and the popping of champagne. And, you know, it is, and that baffles me too. How and why it is that Russia Today devoted so much film to it.
Well, because maybe Russia wants to out whatever's going on.
Maybe.
Okay, hold it there. We're at the bottom of the hour, 1/2 hour to go. My guest this morning, Deborah Carruthers and Joseph Farrell, and we're really kind of letting our imaginations, remember, mm-hmm. imagination, the key to solving all of this. Pretty crazy rituals. We'll be back on the other side. We shall return.
Send a message loud and clear. Looking back, we've touched on sorrowful days. When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes.
And we come back to the strains of Bill Withers. Something that is Lovely Day. My guests this morning, Deborah Carruthers and Joseph Farrell. And Joseph, you want to kind of bring us up to speed on what's going on with our favorite dictator in the Middle East, a guy named Erdogan?
He has just returned, I believe, from a summit with Mr. Putin. He has indicated that there is a possibility of bilateral trade with Russia, denominated in rubles and Turkish lira, which means bye-bye dollar. I suspect that this is a prelude to Turkey formally withdrawing from NATO and issuing a formal request to the United States to close down Incirlik. And there's something else on the other side of the world that just happened. Shinzo Abe's wife went to participate in the protests against the expansion of the American base at Okinawa. Now, the story is being put out that this was done without her husband's knowledge or permission, which, if you know anything about Japanese politics and society, is an absurdity. So I think what we're going to see is pressure building now in Europe to close down a lot of American bases. I think the United States has seen this coming. This is the reason they're putting their bases, shifting them eastward into Eastern Europe. I think that's a hazardous move, to put it bluntly, and at best.
Isn't that kind of like putting all your Basques in one exit?
Yeah, well, that's the problem.
We had a global system of bases to surround the bad guys.
Well, yeah, and now we're putting them in between Europe and Russia. You know, this
so
is,
when Trump says, "I'm not taking nukes in Europe off the table," does he know something?
I think maybe he does. I think he's playing very well to the geopolitics and the cynicism that's been expressed toward American action since 9/11. I think he's playing that very well. But he may know something that we don't. But I do think the United States has been carefully trying to reposition itself in Eastern Europe because it realizes its days might be numbered in Western Europe. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens as a fallout to all of this. I expect that we're going to see those protests against American bases spread, and spread like wildfire. quite frankly.
Well, we've had this incredible overbloated military overreach yep. for decades and decades. Yep. I mean, if yep. you want to make America great again, one way to do it would be to bring home all the money we're spending overseas, and bases overseas yep. are spending money overseas, unlike money spent in outer space, which is never spent in outer space. So if we brought all that home, if we stopped being the super, super power of the world and became America again as part of the Brexit concept of multiple nations interacting each with each other as sovereign mm-hmm. nations, mm-hmm. stability, we save a huge amount of money, and we can begin to rebuild our infrastructure.
Bingo.
The day that Erdogan met Putin was a day so important on the ancient Egyptian sacred calendar, and you probably know what I'm talking about. The heliacal rise of Sirius.
Oh, my God.
Was on that day.
Oh, holy cow. By the way, if you want to join our conversation, our merry band tonight, 505-796-8802, 505-796-8802. I need to get hold of Lily Tomlin to kind of record our, wouldn't that be great? 505-796-8802.
Is this the party to whom
I'm connected? Okay, or Enterprise Mission or The Other Side of Midnight. So join the party. Half hour left to go. Okay, so everything Erdogan is now doing is 180 degrees from what he did just a few months ago, where he shot yep. down a Russian MiG and talked yep. about closing the Dardanelles. And so what happened? Was the coup really real? Was it really sponsored by the CIA? Is he now running home to mommy or daddy?
No, I'll tell you what happened that I think played a huge part in that sudden reversal. The USS Donald Cook incident from last year in the Black Sea, where the Russian Sukhoi 24 fighter jet approached the most advanced Aegis-class missile frigate system in the United States Navy, and then the computers and all the electrical systems went down.
Oh my God, they used the system.
They used a system, and the Sukhoi then promptly executed no less than 12 fake attack runs. Then you had the Russian intervention in Syria, in which the Russians shut down all NATO communications over Syria.
Yeah, right.
Remember that?
But wait a minute, that reveals they're using torsion.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
They, for those of folks who haven't followed this, back in the 50s, people would report they'd be on a lonely road in the middle of the night in their car, and they see a UFO, and their ignition would quit.
Yep.
We now know that the fields that create the zero-gravity propulsion system of, quote, UFOs, i.e. spacecraft, inadvertently kind of affect and suppress electrical currents flowing in circuits. So
yep.
if you weaponize this, if you basically put it in an airplane and fly it over the most sophisticated cruiser we've got and make every light in the place go dark,
mm-hmm.
can you imagine the shattering effect of that on Washington?
Well, imagine the shattering effect on Ankara.
Well, yes.
That's dependent on Washington weapons. So, yeah, you know, I think that was the real turnaround for Erdogan. They realized they were playing with a much bigger fish in the pond with Russia than Washington had been telling them.
When I was researching about the Sirius coincidence, not coincidence,
mm-hmm.
but we all know that Sirius has a companion, and this was new to me. I had not heard that it's theorized that there may actually be a triple system.
Oh my gosh, yes, yes. Back in the 1800s, Alvin Clark actually visually with the refractor that he was building, big telescope, allowed, I forget who it was, to visually see the pup, the little, you know,
okay.
star that orbits Sirius, the big star.
Right.
But fast forward the film, who's the guy that did the Sirius mystery? Robert Temple.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He wrote in his revised book that there were a team of astronomers decades later who thought they had identified a third star in the Sirius system, a red dwarf, which is a very small star, very light mass, lives forever, trillions of years. And if that's true, it would totally change what we think of, obviously, astrophysically, the Sirius system. But more important, it would change what we think that might be living there.
Mm-hmm.
And went there from here a long time ago as part of the Type 2 civilization scenario and all that.
I was noticing that some website I picked out, they talked about the point where the Sirius A and Sirius B are closest together is referred to as their periastron. Is that what I'm...
Yeah, it comes from the word perihelion, which means mm-hmm. closest, sun closest to Earth, helios, sun, perihelios, closest
right.
to... So you basically take the language and expand it out. So,
right.
you know, closest to Earth would be perigee. An Earth orbit is
right.
a perigee, apogee.
Right.
Orbiting a star Paraastrion or Apoastrion. It kind of gets cumbersome. So,
right.
But that's the logic.
And what I saw, or you can confirm for me, that is a 50-year cycle?
50 years, yes.
Isn't that interesting? A 50-year cycle.
Yeah. Well, that's 40,
or 49.
Well, the 50 was a huge, in the Sumerian, Joseph, you can attest to this, the number 50 was Marduk. It was the big guy.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It was everything, and there were precisions from 50. Well, NASA chose specifically to fly by Mars in 1965, and we did that live thing from WTIC. Mm-hmm. And then 50 years later, almost to the hour, they fly by Pluto with New Horizons. This is NASA, your friendly local neighborhood space agency, who claims they wouldn't know a ritual if it came up and bit them in their posterior. And they're running everything by ritual.
Well, I noticed that, according to the page I was looking at, the last periastron of the Sirius companion stars happened in 1994, which happened to be one of the 7-year financial crash cycle years.
There is a group in Canada, I forget their name, but they have actually done graphs showing, kind of like my Accutron data, when Sirius crosses the meridian.
Right.
There's a tremor in the force.
Right.
And they showed me this data, literally hand-drawn graphs, and I've got it buried somewhere in the files. You know, Joseph, they disconnected the Telos the other night.
Yeah, I heard.
Jeez. How they did that, and I thank God I was able to go around it on Skype, but tonight Skype is not working. Isn't that special? Okay, we've got about 15 minutes left. If we can't talk to anybody out there, I guess we have to talk among ourselves.
Oh, well.
So, I think we can arrange for that. Tomorrow night I'm going to talk about the Olympics because there's such an incredible dichotomy. I mean, what's been your impression of the Olympics since I have you both here and we have a little time?
I haven't yet been able to watch the opening ceremony personally, but W again had alerted our little team about looking for the bizarre fertility symbolism.
Oh, God, he's just giving you everything we used to talk about.
I know.
Now, Greg Ahrens, he contributed something really amazing. He found that there was a major celestial alignment during the start of the opening ceremonies, and it was when Sirius was, I think, 33 degrees below one of the horizons. I think the northeast horizon.
Right.
33 connected, obviously, to Mason's 33, connected to the physics of 19.5, connected to energy, to dawning of new eras, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So one of the people I'm going to have on tomorrow night, he was looking for really bad stuff going down around the Olympics.
Yeah.
And he's not finding it.
Right.
it's like the people, there's no doping, there's no cheating. The performers, the contestants, the real people are doing their damnedest, and they're set in this scene that is so symbolic of everything that's wrong with this planet. It's like it was designed to be a showcase of the microcosm of the best and the worst of us. Remember, the good are getting better and the bad are getting worse. So then the question is, what is this set piece designed for? Who is the real audience?
I haven't watched the Olympics. I don't have my cable television hooked up.
Well, you can get snippets on YouTube and all that.
It's not even something that really interests me. It hasn't for a very long time.
Unless it's doubled and triple level messaging again, which is what I think it is, front and center.
It always is. Absolutely. Olympics we've had has been that way.
Like the Super Bowl when they use halftime to send messages.
Oh, yeah. And, the whole London Olympics was just off the charts with symbolism.
So, Joseph, if you don't watch the Olympics, do you at least acknowledge that there's potentially messaging in
the sure.
state? Okay. Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't watch the Super Bowl either, you know. I'm just not a professional or amateur sports person, never have been. But, you know, what I have heard about the Super Bowl halftime performances lately are, yeah, they're definitely messages. They're orgies of militarism and everything else. And, you know, that's one reason I don't like watching them. I'm not into that whole scene that we've seen happen with professional sports events. I'm just not.
I was going to ask something not about the Olympics, but this project, I stumbled on this press release at the CERN website last week called a project called Project Sesame, and that's its acronym, like the word sesame. the light source for the Middle East and neighboring countries.
Hmm.
It's a unique project that's open only to the countries in the Middle East. And I'll give
And what's it supposed to do?
A synchrotron light source.
Okay. That's well known.
Right. And they're looking for proposals from these particular countries in the Middle East. I'll read you, let's see, this one paragraph. It signals the start of the research program at the first international synchrotron research facility in our region. And then they quote this professor, "I am a string physicist. We study potential parallel universes."
Hmm.
Said this professor at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and former vice president of the Sesame Council. "At Sesame, I can actually be in such a parallel universe, one where scientists of the region work together for the benefit of humanity and the benefit of their own people." And it has some other information about it. It says it's a unique program for Bahrain, Cyprus, Egypt, Iran, Israel, Jordan, Pakistan, and the Palestinian Authority, and Turkey.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is something I'm going to keep an eye on, whatever this is.
I didn't tell you guys. Earlier tonight, I went to make a call to M, and my phones had all been disconnected. And for like half an hour, and then they came back and they kept beating like in a Morse code, you know, the dial tone, except it was interrupted.
Yep.
Like someone was deliberately, oh, well, they're obviously attacking the show because we're attacking things that need to be attacked in terms of enlightening things. So, guys, where do we stand with Brexit right now? We haven't heard a lot since...
Prime Minister May is scheduled to meet with President Putin.
Oh.
Yep. Yes.
Oh.
We're all owing. Even M is writing, oh.
Yeah, that happened right after Erdogan had his meeting with Putin. And she called him, right? I think
yes. it was initiated by Tim Downing, and I think, you know, I kind of predicted that this was a move on Britain's part in the British deep state that was very disenchanted with the way American foreign policy has been handled for the past, well, since 9/11, really, and the unipolarism. I suspect that, again, that this is going to spread because France and Germany are very dissatisfied with the sanctions regime. I think Britain is kind of prying open the door there. I also think that this is a move.
When you say the sanctions regime, you mean the European sanctions against
Russia.
Putin for,
right.
for the Ukraine, for
right.
Crimea. Okay.
Right. I also think that this is a move on their part to position themselves depending on who wins the election over here. I think that there's a certain segment of the British deep state that is very, very dissatisfied with a Clinton administration. I think there probably is another segment that would be dissatisfied with Trump, but probably less so. But I do think that, yeah, there's a certain segment of the British deep state that's looking to position itself and looking at the American elections very carefully. And I think this is, again, I think this is going to spread to the rest of Europe. I really do.
There's something else happening that involves China and the SDR and the International Monetary Fund should keep an eye on. On September 30th, their admission into the basket of currencies becomes official. And there's been a lot of buzz already about China getting ready to market bonds that are denominated in a new type of special drawing rights called the market SDR. Mm-hmm. And this is potentially something very big. It's another nail in the coffin on the dollar.
Yep.
So it's going to be an interesting autumn.
You think?
Yeah, it is. I'm afraid so.
So, Joseph, did you hear any of the conversation earlier about when Deborah and I were talking about, you know, the multidimensionality of Donald Trump?
No,
the fact that everything he does that appears to be a huge faux pas, you know, graded on a scale of terrible to horrible to catastrophic, actually appears to have multiple levels of meaning behind what he's saying.
No, I didn't hear that.
Okay. Well, they basically accused Obama of being ISIS, of creating ISIS, and Hillary doing it together. I've said Hillary is the ISIS figure in this, that everything has to point to her being anointed, elected,
yes.
Coronated, whatever. Trump is basically saying what I've been saying, but saying it in a way that doesn't get to the deeper level, which is that, in fact, this is an ancient religion, and the folks that are running the world actually believe in this damn ancient religion, and that's why we see bizarre things that make no sense to us, because the Goddard Tunnel ceremony is part of an ancient religion that's so obfuscated in time that only the people sitting in that audience, and maybe not even most of them, understood what they were seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could be.
Well, that could be. You know, the way I would have reacted to that statement by Trump, if I knew which one specific you're referring to, but my impression is that he's simply.
He said today that Obama founded ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And that Hillary.
I think there's a certain amount of evidence out there, as we probably all know, that the CIA has been very involved with.
But he wasn't meaning by omission, by leaving a power vacuum. He specifically keeps reiterating, no, he founded it. He created it. It's like it's getting so pointed, and of course the mainstream thinks he's losing it. Mm-hmm. But the messaging has got to be going to someone, and it's not us. Who is he communicating that message that he knows? Is it a threat? Is it a threat to reveal even more and less, unless what?
Well, I've said all along, I think he represents a faction of the American deep state. He's getting intelligence from somewhere, so it could be a message. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. We only got a couple of minutes here. Joseph, anything you want to plug?
No, I'm doing fine.
Well, you're working, we're going to talk about your new book, or we're going to talk about one of your books, I think next Thursday, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you'll be on for a full 2 hours next Thursday, one-on-one, and we're going to talk about the backbone of this hidden breakaway civilization that may actually be the tail that's wagging what we think of as the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using serious imagery very precisely here. And Deborah, what's up for you?
I'm going to be researching the colors that Hillary Clinton wears. And speaking, W would agree with you about her being anointed as an ISIS priestess. And that is the reason why she wore white.
No, of course. Yes
it is.
But and see, I was able to bring Darren in for the conversation. So Darren is cleared to be part of the party, and the other guy's trying to call us.
I guess I have a hotline here or something.
You must have a direct connection.
We saw 40 shooting stars in an hour.
Woo!
Wow.
We got to go outside.
Meteor. Yes, everyone, leave the program. Music is playing somewhere, I hope. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Deborah. Yes. Thank you, Darren. Uh-huh. Thank you, all the callers who tried to call in. We'll fix that by Saturday morning. So until then, same time, same bat channel. Go out and look at the Perseids.
Yes.
And remember, as you're gazing up, that constellation Orion is rising in the east. Mm-hmm. Look to the belt. Third star on the left. Straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.
Good night.